Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the September 8th, 2020 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Management Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Hi, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island staff, all callers will be muted during this meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. During this meeting, if anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
This is Carol Ventura. Nicole Clement, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good afternoon. This is Nicole Clement. Pursuant to Executive Order 20-46, extended by Executive Order 20-63, and as may be further amended or extended, this meeting is being held via teleconference. Members of the public can visit the Rhode Island Housing website to view the agenda and information on the actions being taken. In the event this teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. I would now like to provide some additional guidance to our committee members and staff as they participate in this meeting. Committee Chairman Brett Smiley will preside. Please remember to state your name prior to speaking, and please remember to mute your telephone line when you are not speaking, and we appreciate your cooperation. Now, I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Smiley to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Nicole. This is Brett Smiley. Thank you, everyone, for joining today's meeting. I would like to call the September 8th meeting of the Management Committee of Rhode Island Housing to order and ask that Carol Ventura please take a roll call of attendance of committee members, commissioners, and Rhode Island Housing staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. I will now conduct a roll call of members of the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and Rhode Island Housing staff in attendance. Chairman Nicholas Retsina.
Here.
Commissioner Brett Smiley.
Here.
Commissioner designee Sol Taubin on behalf of Treasurer Seth Magaziner.
Here.
Commissioner Steve McAllister. Staff of Rhode Island Housing, James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Primiano.
Here.
Cara LaChapelle.
Here.
Clarabelle Shavers.
Here.
Leslie McKnight.
Here.
Christine Hunsinger.
Here.
Nicole Clement.
Here.
Peter Pagonis. Jessica Mowry.
Here.
CJ Rotella.
Here.
Commissioner Smiley, the roll call is complete.
Thank you, Carol. Again, this is Brett Smiley. I'd like to start with committee action item number one, approval of the Management Committee meeting held on August 3rd, 2020. I will now request a motion to approve the minutes. If you could state your name when making a motion.
Nick Retsina, I would move approval.
Thanks, Nick. Is there a second on the motion? This is Brett Smiley. I'll make the second. Are there any questions or comments on the motion to approve the minutes? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the Management Committee meeting held on August 3rd, 2020, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley?
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin?
I will abstain just due to not being at the past meeting.
Thank you. The vote is 2 ayes, no nays, and 1 abstention. The vote passes.
Thank you, Nicole. Again, this is Brett Smiley. I'd like to move to committee item number 2, recommendation for approval of amendments to the Rhode Island Housing Administrative Plan. And we'll introduce Claribel Shavers, Director of Leased Housing and Rental Services, who will present action item number 2. Claribel?
Thank you, Committee Chairman Smiley. Yes, we are proposing to make 2 changes to our admin plan. The first change is related to our role as the PHA and the CWL administrator. In that role, we're always looking for ways to streamline our processes. The most recent change that we're proposing to change is to transition to a fully electronic process for purging the waitlist. Ultimately, this will reduce expenses and improve administrative efficiencies. Currently, the process requires that we send a second notification to families who do not respond to our first notification via mail, via paper. Currently, we have over 20,000 families on the waitlist. Doing a paper mailing to families that don't respond, which usually is half of the families, is very burdensome and could be very expensive. So moving to a fully electronic system will allow us to improve that efficiency, especially in this day and age when more and more families are relying on electronic mail. The second request that we're proposing to make to the admin plan is to add an initiative. It's a targeted funding opportunity offered by HUD. It's known as the Foster Youth Initiative. As part of this initiative, we would be allowed to, with HUD's permission, to issue special purpose vouchers to foster youth aging out of foster care between the ages of 18 and 25. These foster youth will get a voucher that would allow them to receive rental assistance for up to 3 years. So that concludes our proposed changes for our admin plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, it's Brett Smiley. If I could ask, first of all, just to comment on the amendment with respect to foster youth. I think that's wonderful. At the state level, we have used some of our federal stimulus dollars to provide additional services to Rhode Island foster kids who are aging out of state service as well, and that's a really difficult transition time. And so this additional support, I think, is terrific. And I'm really pleased to hear that. What's the impact and do we have any knowledge of the propensity of families who don't have access to email who might be terminated from the wait list in this purge by not being notified by mail?
Sure. So when we initially rolled out the CWL, I believe now it's almost 3 years now, if not more, we require that all families that apply to the waitlist had to have an email. They had to register via online system. Soon after that, you know, we kept notifying the families whenever they needed to update to remind the families that they needed to have a registered email and a registered account. We feel comfortable now. Every family that's right now on the waitlist is a registered user of the system and all have email accounts. So based on that information, we feel confident that we're able to do the purge online. The rate of non-response is usually 50%, but that's been a history regardless if we did it online using email versus paper. It still would probably be the same rate.
All right, thank you very much. It's Brett. Are there other questions from the committee members?
Yes, this is Nick Racinas. Claribel, in any kind of transition, there's a transition risk, in this case going all electronic. Are there any particular steps we're taking to mitigate that risk?
Yes, it's usually using an online system. So again, you know, now that we've used the system for 3 or 4 years now, we feel fully confident that the families are very familiar with using the Yardi online system. Recently, we rolled out a couple of housing rental assistance programs using the same online system. And every time we roll out some type of new program and we roll out the ability to use the online system, we post information, we post directions on our website. We have also 1-800 numbers ready and available for families to call for support. So we make ourselves make sure that we have, you know, we have staff available to respond to anybody who has got any kind of support issues so we can respond quickly.
Okay, thank you.
This is Sol. What efforts will be made to notify families if the email bounces back?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of the question.
If the email bounces back, what efforts will be made to notify families in that scenario?
Did we go to a full email system?
Yeah, so if I'm an applicant on the wait list and you send an email to notify me that if I don't respond, I will be purged and the email bounces back, so I did not ultimately receive that communication. Is there going to be another effort made to notify me?
Yes. The admin plan requires us to at least notify you twice. There's an initial requirement to right now via email, the second via paper. We propose to do both notifications by email because we're transitioning this for the first time to do a fully online notification. We're proposing probably to do a third notification to families who don't respond before removing them from the wait list.
And would the third attempt include like a different method of communication, be it a robocall or mail?
It probably will still include emails. What we've done in the past and we still propose to do is we engage our service providers. A lot of our families have access to the system working with, you know, the local shelters or local agencies. So we always engage them and we always make sure that when they have clients, we let them inform them that we'll be purging the waitlist. We've actually been pretty successful when we work with our service providers.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. I think my concern was mostly about, you know, one, electronic communication for clients who might not have consistent internet access and only made an email to apply for the voucher program and thus might not receive the notification, and then also for folks whose emails might not be working. But that's useful information. Thanks.
No problem.
This is Brett Smiley. Are there other questions or comments? Hearing none, then I will request a motion to approve action item number 2, the changes to the Rhode Island Housing Administrative Plan.
I would so move. This is Nick Martinez.
Thank you, Nick. Is there a second?
This is Sol Tubman. Seconded.
Thank you, Sol. Are there questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending for approval the amendments to the Rhode Island Housing Administrative Plan to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley?
Aye.
Chairman Ritzenas?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin?
Aye.
The motion passes. The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Brett Smiley. I'd like to introduce committee action item number 3, recommendation for approval of delegation of corporate authority. And we'll ask Nicole Clement, General Counsel, to present item number 3.
Thank you, Commissioner Smiley. This is Nicole Clement. This request for action is for the authorization of designated officers and or employees to act on behalf of Rhode Island Housing, specifically to execute and deliver any contracts, documents, or instruments which may be entered into by Rhode Island Housing pursuant to our Enabling Act. This is a housekeeping matter. Rhode Island Housing's corporate signatory authority was last updated by the board in 2017, and staff believes it is prudent and in the best interest of Rhode Island Housing to periodically update its corporate signatory authority to allow for any changes in titles, staffing, and or reorganization of functions. The designation authorizes the chairman, the executive director, or her designee, the deputy executive director, and the chief financial officer to sign on behalf of the corporation. This designation will supersede any previous designations. And so we ask that this designation be approved for recommendation to the Board of Commissioners, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
This is Brett Smiley. Thank you, Nicole. Are there any questions?
I have one. I guess I assume, Nicole, that these are exactly the same titles as when we did it in 2017.
Well, actually, no. So we used to have deputy director. That was a title that we used for deputy director of operations, which was Peter Walsh's position, and then deputy director of programs, which Carol Ventura held at that time. We now have changed that title to deputy executive director, which James Comer holds at this point.
And that was the only change?
That was the only change.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Again, it's Brett. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, I will take a motion to approve action item number 3.
This is Sol. So moved.
So moved.
Thank you, Sol.
So
is there a second?
Seconded
by Nick. Thank you. Any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending for approval the delegation of corporate authority to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley?
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin?
Aye.
The motion passes. The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, this is Brett Smiley. Would like to move to committee action item number 4, recommendation for appointment of MERS corporate signing officers. And we'll introduce Leslie McKnight, Assistant Deputy Director, and Peter Pagonis, Director of Homeownership, who will present item number 4. Leslie or Peter?
Hi, this is Leslie. I am presenting on behalf of Peter. I am presenting a request for action for approval of appointment of MERS corporate signing officers. MERS owns and operates an electronic registry known as the MERS system. The MERS system tracks the servicing rights and ownership of mortgages located throughout the country. MERS assigns a mortgage identification number to each mortgage loan that is registered in the MERS system and requires MERS members to name MERS as the mortgagee on each loan it originates. Rhode Island Housing became a MERS member in 2016. As part of its membership, each year, Rhode Island Housing obtains a corporate resolution from MERS, which designates certain Rhode Island Housing employees as MERS signing officers and grants them authority to perform certain actions, such as executing mortgage discharges on behalf of MERS. The MERS system rules of membership specify that MERS signing officers must be officers and or employees of the MERS member. Approval of this request for action will enable Rhode Island Housing staff, including the CFO, the Assistant Deputy Director of Loan Servicing, the Director of Home Ownership, and any Assistant Director of Home Ownership and Loan Servicing to continue to perform these required actions in accordance with the rules of membership.
Thank you, Leslie. It's Brett Smiley again. Are there any questions for Leslie on item number 4? Hearing none, then I'll request a motion to approve item number 4 to the full Board of Commissioners. This is Brett Smiley. I will make the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Nick. Are there any questions or comments on the motion? Hearing none, I'll ask Nicole Clement to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending for approval the appointment of MERS corporate signing officers to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin.
Aye.
The motion passes. The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
This is Carol Ventura. Commissioner Smiley, I would like to add a discussion item to today's agenda entitled Single Family Program and Portfolio Update. Peter Pagonis, Director of Homeownership, will provide an update to the committee on our single family program activity, and Leslie McKnight will provide an update on our single family portfolio statistics.
Thank you,
Carol.
Hi, this is
Hey, Peter. I'm sorry, it's Brett. Before you begin your presentation, I think I need to take a motion to add this to the agenda. Is that correct, Nicole?
That is correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, it's Brett Smiley. I'd like to request a motion to add the discussion item to the management committee agenda. So, Nick, or Saul,
Nick,
if you
I would
please
so
make
move.
That motion.
I would so move.
Thank you, Nick. Is there a second?
Mrs. Saul seconded.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments on the motion? If not, Nicole, if you please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of adding to the agenda for discussion purposes only, a discussion item entitled Single Family Program and Portfolio Update, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Resines.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole. Over to you, Peter.
Thank you, Brett. Before I get into some of the numbers that we're seeing on the lending front, I just wanted to give a brief overview on what we're seeing in the market in Rhode Island. Of course, it's a very tight market. Inventory is very low. On the positive side, long-term interest rates and mortgage interest rates are very low, which is good for the consumer. Just to give some context, the median sales price of a single-family home in July in Rhode Island rose to almost $332,000. That's almost a 12% gain year over year as compared to July of 2019. So prices have been escalating rapidly. Lack of inventory, as I mentioned, is a huge issue in Rhode Island and nationally. Nationally, there's been an 18% drop in July in total inventory as compared to the year previously. If we juxtapose that with what is happening in Rhode Island, it's a 36% decline among condos, single-family, and multifamily homes. Again, we're talking about inventory. It's certainly a seller's market, and the way we quantify that is by looking at the number of months of inventory. Right now, we're at about 2.5 months of inventory, which suggests it is indeed a market where sellers are dictating terms and have a lot of leverage. Most industry professionals consider about 4 to 5 months to be a balanced market, and then anything north of 5 months to be a buyer's market. In terms of our production, the good news is we are on track to reaching our origination target of 1,700. As through August, we're currently on a run rate of about 1,650. And this number would also be close to what we closed in 2019, which was 1,726. The year got off to a great start for us, but at around March 13th, originations basically fell precipitously overnight, as did most business lines across the country, and August and April as well was a very slow month in terms of originated. We have now creeped up since then consistently and are set to have a good year when the dust settles. Generally speaking, our average loan amount has grown incredibly from $196,000 in 2017 to just north of $243,000 year-to-date 2020. That's an increase of 20% in less than 3 years. So, again, prices are rising very rapidly and putting a lot of pressure on the first-time home buyer. To keep pace with these escalating home prices, on Tuesday, a week from today, we're rolling out a new down payment assistance program. It'll be where the borrower can receive $10,000 in the form of a 0% down payment assistance loan. This program replaces the recently retired Spring 7500, and this program will be funded with MRB proceeds. In terms of production, not much has changed in terms of where the business is coming from. Approximately 94% of our business is originated through our participating lender channel and about 6% through our loan center. We're also originating about 90% or 89% through with FHA mortgages and about 11% in the conventional market. That is my update.
Thank you, Peter. It's Brett Smiley. Are there any questions for Peter?
Peter, this is Nick. How is that factored right now?
Sorry, you broke up a bit, Nick. Could you ask the question again?
Sure, I'm sorry. Peter, I'm curious how you see the role of the historically low interest rates in terms of going, to what extent is that affecting some of the still face the headwind of the pandemic?
So of course, the long-term interest rates have been great for the consumer. However, countering that and actually stronger than that is the rapid acceleration of home prices. So it's a net loss to the consumer. It's great for those that have stable income and are employed right now to get a mortgage around 3%. But again, inventory is an issue. And as we know through the housing report that was published a few years ago, seniors compounding the problem, seniors are aging in place. And then now we're hearing that a lot of seniors who would otherwise look for a home in a nursing home or an assisted living type facility are now somewhat afraid of going that route due to some of the COVID-19 complications that we've seen around the country.
Okay, thank you.
And again, I guess my point with that is, of course, by the seniors aging in place and not leaving, they're not freeing up inventory, which would be perfect for a first-time home buyer.
This is Carol Brett. Ventura. Sorry, Brett.
No, I was just going to call for other questions. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay. I was just going to turn it over to Leslie now to talk about the single-family portfolio, if there are no other questions.
Great.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Carol. For month-end August, we experienced an increase of 106 delinquent accounts compared to July of 2020. We have a total of 1,789 delinquent accounts, of which 1,148 are in forbearance, for a total delinquency percentage of 14.18%. There are 1,059 delinquent loans that are 90 days or more past due. Of these, 825 are in forbearance. Phone call volume has decreased significantly, with just under 5,000 calls handled by loan servicing staff in August. This is a reduction of more than 50% of the number of calls received in the months immediately following the national emergency declaration. New forbearance requests continue to be low. We received an additional 114 requests in August, with the majority of borrowers indicating that the loss of the enhanced federal unemployment was the cause of their hardship. We continue to see an increase in the number of borrowers moving out of COVID forbearance. 311 borrowers have cured their delinquency through August, and an additional 292 borrowers are currently being reviewed for loss mitigation. This is an increase of 247 borrowers over July. FHA is paying COVID emergency partial claims within a week of submission, which is positive news for cash flow and liquidity, as these funds reimburse us for principal interest and escrow advances made during the forbearance period. The eviction and foreclosure moratoriums have been extended through December 31st for all government-insured and government-sponsored mortgages. This represents approximately 80% of our portfolio. Does anybody have any questions?
This is Nick. Do we have many early payment defaults?
So we are not seeing as many early payment defaults, but what we are seeing, Nick, is borrowers who are asking for forbearance. So technically that's not a default. But, you know, we're substituting the early payment defaults for new forbearance requests.
Leslie, can you quantify those when you say we're seeing some? It's Brett, I'm sorry. Is there how many?
It is not significant. It's not significant at all. I mean, I think we, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say we were averaging just under 100 early payment defaults per year, and the number is definitely less than that with forbearance requests. There is, you know, documentation that's required prior to closing to document that folks are employed. Peter could speak to that in more detail, but there are, you know, measures in place to make sure people are not going to the closing table while they've received notice of layoff or furlough. So that, I think that's helping reduce those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Are there other questions of Peter and Leslie?
How does this compare? One last question. How, best you can recollect, how does the performance of these loans that are in trouble right from the get-go compare to 2008, 2009, that period of time?
Well, I can say we're probably at a higher overall delinquency rate right now than we were in 2008, 2009. So we had a delinquency rate of 14.18%. In looking back at the delinquency rates during that Great Recession, we're definitely having a higher level of delinquency right now. Again, that's not totally related to borrowers that are having early payment default. I think, though, that we have better solutions for folks, and we're hoping that this is not a long-term situation. I mean, I think everyone is very hopeful for a vaccination and hoping that that will, you know, jumpstart the economy again and result in people going back to their pre-COVID, you know, behavior in terms of economic impact. So I don't think we're looking at a multi-year event here. I think it's related to COVID, and I think people are dying to get out and, you know, go about, spend money, and do things. It's just a matter of, you know, people getting back to work.
This is Carol Ventura. One thing I would note, Nick, our portfolio does look different now than what it did in 2008. You know, the mortgages are insured, they're FHA insured, so I think the portfolio is in better shape than what it was back in 2008. Leslie, any comments on that?
Yeah, I actually have a few numbers here for that. So in terms of where we stand, I spoke about the fact that right now we have 1,148 active borrowers who are currently in forbearance. 8.3% of those borrowers are Fannie Mae loans. 67.7% of those borrowers are Ginnie Mae FHA-insured loans. And only 24% of those borrowers are actually asset loans. So the risk level is significantly lower today than it was in 2008, 2009. Most of the borrowers, 67.7%, have a real good opportunity to use the FHA emergency partial claim. We're having tremendous success with that. And as I indicated previously, we will be made whole with that. So it benefits the borrower and it benefits the servicer, and it really mitigates our risk almost totally. Fannie Mae has a similar product or solution, I should say, not as easy as FHA's, but it exists. And again, for the 24% that are Rhode Island Housing Asset loans, that is where we would have some level of risk. We're looking at doing modifications with those borrowers once they're back to work. In addition to that, I might mention that we do have the HHFRI funds, $2 million, and we just received updated numbers earlier today. The numbers aren't significant, but 36% of the borrowers who have applied for the HHFRI assistance, and those would be borrowers who are impacted by COVID through unemployment, 36% of those are Rhode Island housing borrowers. So we continue to encourage our borrowers that we believe would qualify for the program to apply for those funds.
That's great. Thanks, Carol. Any final questions? Um, Hearing none, there is no further business, and therefore I would request a motion to adjourn, please.
So moved.
Thanks, Nick. Saul, were you second?
Seconded.
Thank you. And I will ask Nicole to please take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Commissioner. When I call your name, if you are in favor of adjourning this meeting, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Smiley.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Talbin.
Aye.
The motion passes. The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.